Strong winds damaged trees and other plants across much of Iowa this week. So this hour, we'll play Tree Doctor and talk about how to care for your damaged trees. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist, will be here to share some advice about how to help your trees recover from wind damage. And, of course, they'll also answer your questions about the plants in your life. 866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and strong winds damaged trees and other plants across much of Iowa this week. While you clean up or contemplate cleaning up, we are here to give you a little bit of guidance. Jeff Iles is here, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. Hello, Jeff.
Happy Friday.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Good to be here.
Richard Giron is also here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And let's start with those downed limbs. We did have some really strong winds. A lot of trees lost limbs this week. So let's say you have a limb down in your yard. What do you do?
Well, if it's down, I guess maybe that's a good thing, provided it didn't cause any damage to property or pets or people. But what I'm more concerned about, besides getting rid of the limb, is what's left up in the tree. Is there a jagged wound that needs to be treated? Are there other limbs that are hung up in the crown that also deserve your attention? So maybe the best thing to do is get an assessment from the ground. And if this is a job too big for you, and there's no shame in admitting that, then call in the heavy artillery. Call in people that know what they're doing, that can get up in the tree safely. That's a key word. And make a clean cut where a branch might have broken off jaggedly, or remove other widowmakers up in the crown that could be a problem. So really the job for the homeowner is assessment and removing those dangerous limbs in a safe way.
Is there something you should do to make sure you're seeing the whole tree? Because just looking up from the ground doesn't necessarily get you a full view.
Yeah, it's good point. You can't always see everything from the ground. And so if you've got a smaller tree, that's an easy job. But a larger tree, any tree that I have in my property that has suffered damage, I want it assessed properly. And really, sometimes the only way to do that, is to get up in the tree itself. And so having a tree care company come out and give the tree a good once-over is probably a good thing, especially after a major storm event like we had.
Is there a specific kind of tree that we want to be particularly careful with this time of year?
Yeah, it's a good question, Charity. There are some that always draw my attention, and they're the same old cast of characters we've talked about before. And not to besmirch the reputations of silver maple and hackberry and willow and poplar, but those are the ones that tend to grow fast. They tend to develop sometimes bad architecture, and they are the ones that tend to fall apart, especially as they get older. So those are the big four. Any tree can be dangerous. Even good old oak trees, once they get old, can have problems. But it's the hackberries and the silver maples that I really focus in on. So it's kind of frustrating to think about what we should do now, but a lot of these problems got started many, many years ago. And I know we've beat that horse a lot over the years, but proper pruning when trees are young is one way to avoid some of these problems as they mature. And an awful lot of trees are planted, they're pruned for a while, but then they're forgotten about. And that's just a recipe for disaster.
How about those oak trees? Because although they're pretty strong and pretty sturdy, every once in a while one of them does lose a branch, and that's a particularly vulnerable problem, right?
Right. Well, we advise people to not prune oak trees during the growing season because of the specter of oak wilt. Oak wilt is a fungal disease that is vectored, spread around the landscape by an insect, and so we don't want to create open wounds on oak trees during their vulnerable period. So what about a tree that loses a limb from storm? What do we do then? Well, again, we want to make a fresh cut to get rid of the jagged pieces. Don't re-injure the tree. Don't cut into good wood. But it begs the question, should I be doing something with that wound? Should I be treating it with wound dressing? Should I be painting it with something? Should I be performing incantations?
incantations are really useful, I think.
I usually do that. That's a safe thing to do, and it doesn't cost me much. The wound dressings, the jury is still out. I hear a lot of folks still recommending wound dressings. In the case of pruning oaks during the growing season, the research isn't all that strong, but I guess it's better than maybe doing nothing. But so there are some commercial wound dressings on the market, but there is the other side of the coin where that says wound dressings will sometimes slow down the wound closure process. So I don't know. I'm a minimalist. I tend to go back and make a fresh cut and let it go at that. But we certainly do not advocate the intentional pruning of oak trees this time of year.
All right. And talking about wound dressing, you mentioned earlier we need to look at that wound and see if it's something we need to do something about. How do you know? What are you looking for on any kind of tree, not just oaks?
Well, wound dressings go out the window 99% of the time. They're cosmetic. They don't really help in the wound closure process. In fact, might even retard it. So I'm not an advocate of wound dressings, except in the special case of when you have to prune an oak during the growing season. But other species, I don't use them. There's just no call for that. Summertime pruning is very good for many, many species. In fact, I like to prune in the summer because when you prune at that time of the year, trees don't resprout as vigorously. So I'm a big fan of pruning in the summer. Wounds close very quickly. The tree is growing vigorously, and so the wounds will close quickly. Trees respond to wounding faster in May and June than they might in the winter. So I don't have a problem with pruning this time of the year, sometimes the leaves get in the way, Charity. You know, leaves are one of those nuisances. So in the winter, when the leaves aren't there, you can really see the plant's architecture better. But summer pruning is just fine.
Now, sometimes when a limb comes down, it does leave a big jagged wound.
Yep.
Is that of concern?
Right. Well, that's what you don't want. And if you can't get up to the wound, if you can't get up to the broken branch, have a professional do this. But if it's within your reach, yeah, cut away the jagged tissue, make it look good. There's something to be said for that. But again, we're following the same principles we always follow. You don't want to flush cut a branch. You want to stay outside of the branch collar. There are some good publications that can show your listeners what exactly those terms mean. But you're trying not to re-injure the tree. Get rid of the wood that's jagged, the tissue that is just hanging there, but don't make any fresh wounds.
And when I got up on Wednesday morning, there were a lot of pictures on my Facebook feed of people with their down limbs, you know, on a fence or on a play structure, and some people saying, oh, thank goodness that didn't hit the fence or hit the house. Do you need to look at the trees in your yard and see what the risks are as far as a limb hitting your house? Because that can be a really expensive problem.
Sure. No, great point. Even before a tree fails, you should be looking at those trees in your yard. And if there's a limb that is pointed towards the house or hanging over a play structure, I want to assess that limb. Is it strongly attached to the tree? And there are some signs that a trained arborist can pick up on. So, yeah, I have a love for trees. I respect them, but you have to have a healthy respect for them because they're big and they're heavy, and they don't always announce their intentions. It doesn't take a 40-mile-an-hour gust of wind to bring a limb down. Limbs can fall on their own on a calm day like today. So when we invite these big, heavy things into our yards, they require our attention. They require our vigilance. And I think it's money well spent to have a trained arborist come out once in a while and assess the trees in your property, even if they haven't suffered damage.
Well, and of course, we'll be taking your questions about the trees in your landscape, because I know a lot of people are dealing with this right now. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Well, let's go back quickly to the beginning of your relationship with a tree. When you do plant one in your landscape, I mean, you're talking about the things that we need to be doing in the first several years that the tree is in our yard. What are our priorities? I mean, we get it in there, we water it in good. What do we need to do?
Well, I'm obliged to say the words people are tired of hearing me say, and that is finding the right tree for the site. So if you want a large oak tree, then don't cram it into a small backyard or into a 6-foot wide tree lawn. So the plant has to match the site. I'm a big fan of trying to develop a central leader on any tree, and then good branch spacing around that leader. Don't limb the tree up when the tree is young. Allow those lower branches to stay in place for a little while, but you've got to take the long view. You've got to know when to take branches off. You've got to be looking for rubbing and crossing branches and all kinds of things. So it's really looking at the young tree and realizing that most of what you see when the tree is first planted is temporary, that the big tree that will eventually take that place will be tissue that forms after the fact. But we're doing all we can to leave branches in place that will help feed the plant. We want to create good structure now and keep going with that as the tree matures. But the pruning has to be done for the life of the tree. I can't think of any tree you can plant and just let go.
Now, of course, a lot of us thinking about this, we may be thinking about trees in our yard right now who may have some of those problems
sure.
that we haven't taken care
yeah.
of. Other than oak trees, are there kinds of trees that we want to really avoid pruning this time of year?
Oh, we used to be concerned about pruning American elm this time of the year because of the specter of Dutch elm disease. And of course, that's another disease that's vectored by an insect. Most of the elms we planted today show resistance to Dutch elm disease, so I'm not sure that's a concern. I can't think of too many plants that I wouldn't take a saw to this time of the year. But we don't want to go too crazy. I mean, there's a limit to how much we should be pruning at any one time. There are numbers bandied about, but you don't want to remove too much of the canopy at any one time. So that's why annual pruning is a good thing, because you can take out what you need to take out and not rob the tree of its important photosynthetic machinery.
Now, just yesterday as I was walking around, I noticed that the winds had blown some of the limbs of one of my apple trees kind of into a tangle. And then I thought, oh, the limb structure is not very good here. How about fruit trees this time of year? Because they are doing some fairly important work.
Yeah. Well, the fruit trees are a horse of a different color. You're looking there more for developing scaffold branchings for the fruit to hang on. You want some light penetration. A lot of the fruit trees I see that are neglected have a lot of water sprout growth in the canopies. And that's kind of rank tissue that doesn't really provide any fruit or any benefit to the tree. And we find that if we take the water sprouts off this time of the year, they don't come back quite as quickly. So I look at kind of the same thing. I'm trying to avoid branches rubbing and crossing. I want good scaffold branches that allow some light and wind to penetrate. A lot of growers like to prune in the winter, the dormant season, because they can see the architecture better.
Right.
Yeah, but you can still do that now.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. They are here to answer your questions about trees, but also other plants in your life as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we are going to start with a couple of tree questions. Bob is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Bob.
Hi. We have a very large oak tree. It extends well above our two-story house, and this tree divides into two main branches, and one of the main branches is directly over our roof, directly over our bedroom. This branch by itself is larger than most trees, and we did have an arborist look at it who said that they thought the union of where the two branches branch off is solid, but that arborist suggested that maybe the solution for this large branch that's over our roof would be to cable it. She thought that taking off that branch would just kill the tree because it's more than half the tree. So my question is cabling a viable option for a dangerous branch that's hanging over your house?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bob. In fact, Richard and I were just talking about that during the break, about what if you have a branch hanging over your house that looks strong enough, that looks good, but you're a little worried about it. Installing hardware is sometimes done to shore up a tree But you need to keep in mind that installing hardware will never make that tree 100% safe. So there are no guarantees in life, I guess. This reduces the risk, but those cables need to be inspected every now and again. Typically, they are installed in the tree well above the crotch where the tree meets. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure what he or she recommended, but these cables will provide some level of stability. But man, it doesn't protect you from every bad thing that could happen. And I agree. If you took that limb off, it would make the tree look bad. You'd probably take away half the canopy.
Right. And they suggested it would kill the tree too. Probably.
Yeah. Well, it certainly wouldn't do it any favors. The tree might begin slowly declining. But
so is the only really safe thing to do is take down the entire tree if you're worried about it?
Well, if you're totally risk averse, and I tend to be that way, yeah. But darn it, that's a very, very tough call. You might get a second or third opinion. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm kicking the can down the road here because it's irresponsible for me to tell you what to do without even seeing the tree. But
sure.
You're right. You're correct in being a bit wary. But I just would hate to have you think that installing cables is going to fix the problem for good. It's not like drywall. So,
So I gather it'll improve the problem but not fix it, if I'm reading you right.
Yeah. That's better said than what I did. So, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, good luck.
Yeah, best of luck. Thanks a lot for your call, Bob. Thanks. Next up, we've got another oak tree question. This is Hayes in Coon Rapids. Hi, Hayes.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, it sounds like I have a very similar tree to your previous caller. It doesn't hang over the house, but it's very, very old. It has, it looks like where a branch used to be that's been removed, but the cordwood is exposed. And I'm wondering if there's a way I could seal it up to prevent it from rotting from the inside out. And at the same time, some of the lower branches are so large and extend out so far, they're sagging, and the previous owner has propped them up with 2x4s.
Hmm.
I'm wondering if the tree would be better served to just remove those, or if that's an acceptable solution.
So this is a bur oak, Hayes?
Correct.
Okay. Oh, boy. These are tough questions, Charity. I'm going to leave right now, if that's okay.
All right, then Richard gets to answer.
Well, I've seen limbs propped up with 2x4s. It's kind of artistic.
That's the term you thought of when you saw it.
It's kind of like cabling. I mean, they'll help somewhat. They're not going to provide all the strength you need if you load up a lot of ice and snow on those limbs. But it's okay. I guess the bigger question is about that exposed area. Your question was what could you do to that wound, that open wound, and there really is very nothing, not much you can do. There's no wound dressing, there's no cement, there's nothing you can put on that tree to help it cope with that wound. Trees have an ability to deal with these things chemically. They set up barriers, they set up walls, and there's nothing much you can do to help that process along. So there's nothing you can slap on that wound to make it better. But that is a place that I would be concerned about. Is there decay behind that? And is there a major branch tied into that wood that might be decayed? So have you had an arborist come out and look?
I have not yet, no. We actually just purchased a home, so I was... That was kind of my first stop.
Yeah, it's money well spent, Hayes. Again, there's only so much that we can tell you here without seeing
sure.
the plant, but an on-site visit, especially drawing his or her attention to that previous wound, is what concerns me more than those lower branches.
Well, we will do that then.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for your call,
Thank
Hayes.
You.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. And next up, let's go to Tareen in Radcliffe. Hi, Tareen.
Hi, this is Kareen.
Oh, hey. Kareen, sorry about that. What's your question?
My hackberry, the total top of it has died. It didn't leaf out this spring. And I'm just wanting to know, I'm going to have to take it back to the ground, right?
So, Kareen, how old of a plant is this?
Well, we've lived here 10 years. I probably planted it within 2 years of that, so it's 8 or 9 years old, and it's the trunk's probably I didn't go out and measure it, 8 or 9 inches in diameter. It was doing fine, and I thought hackberry was really recommended for Iowa. And why would the whole top of it not leaf out this spring?
Yeah.
It's been healthy.
Yeah, that hackberry is a tough character. I don't know why that would have happened. So there's nothing salvageable?
No, the whole top is dead. It's the bottom branches all the way around are leafed out. I don't know how healthy the leaves are. I haven't gone close and inspected them, but
yeah, I'd be tempted to try to do something with what's remaining of the canopy instead of cutting it right back to the ground, which is something you could do. But I'd be tempted to remove anything that's dead, see what you have left. You'd be surprised at how trees will develop new leaders. Even from branches,
is that right?
I think that would be my first plan of attack. You could always please go ahead.
Should I do that now?
Yeah.
Or wait until spring?
No, I would do that now. So all you're doing is getting out there with a good sharp handsaw. Hopefully, it's something you can handle from the ground, and trimming off all the dead tissue. You might even send me a picture. This might be kind of fun. We could look at it that way, and maybe you're right. Maybe you need to start from the ground again.
I can't imagine that it will compensate for this total top gone. It's kind of like a bald gentleman with a little hair around the bottom.
Oh,
you know?
Oh dear.
Thanks, Corrine.
I can't see you. I don't have Skype.
Very, very offensive. Don't send me your picture now. The heck with it.
Well, you can send her a picture of you, Jeff.
This is radio, darn it.
Some pictures.
I thought it was safe on radio. Yeah. All right, Corrine. No. That's great. Happy Friday. Send me your picture.
It was the best way I could think to describe
it was
rocks.
A great analogy. One of the best analogies I've
very vivid.
Heard. Yeah. Thank you.
It just has a rim around the bottom. And so,
yeah. No, you've made your point, Corrine. your point.
If you think there's any chance that it would recover from this,
well, I'll tell you this: my hair's not coming back. So, but I think your tree has a better chance than my hair. So, my email address, and I don't mind giving this out over the air. It's just my last name: Iles, I-L-E-S at iastate.edu.
All right, Corrine, good luck with that. Thanks a lot for the call. And you can join our conversation, 866-780-9100. And Richard needs a question here. So I've got one for you. This one's from Christy in Cedar Rapids. And I've been wondering about this myself because there's been a lot of news coverage about wild parsnips, which, of course, can be really nasty. You can get a really nasty rash from them. But her question is, I'm curious why wild parsnips are more of a burgeoning concern recently. Are they a native plant that's become more pervasive?
I don't believe it's native. I think it's introduced, but just like wild carrot, it's a very common weed. And I think it's been maybe on television or radio, and so people are aware of it, maybe more so than in the past. But it's a very common weed. When you drive down the road, you'll see it in roadside ditches, pastures. It's very, very common, very distinctive plant. It has those, it's a tall plant with yellow flowers on top, very distinctive. So, but it's a very, very common weed, and it's very prolific as far as the seeds.
And do you think we're having a particularly bad year, or is this just something that caught on?
I think it just caught on. People noticed it.
All right.
It's always been there.
Yes. I was surprised that it was news because I thought, well, I've been avoiding that for many years.
For a long time, yes.
I didn't know if we were having a particularly fruitful season for wild parsnips or something like that, but it is one to avoid. Here's a question from Daryl in Pella. Any suggestions for deer repellents that truly work? Deer are decimating our daylily blossoms, petunias, vegetables, etc.
I guess the key point would be that deer will eat almost anything if they're hungry. So there really is nothing that is deer-proof as far as plant material. As far as repellents, sometimes they work. You have two types. You have either taste repellents or odor repellents. Sometimes they do work. Other times they don't. And I would say more often they don't work. And so when they don't work, then you only have one real option, and that's using some type of fencing to keep them out, basically.
All right. And here's a question from Jim. What is the best treatment protocol for magnolia tree scale?
Well, that's a tough one. We have some on campus that are infested with the scale. It's very, very prominent. And the thing that you see most, it's one of the larger scale insects. It's kind of a light tan, very noticeable on the branches. The other thing you see is the sap, which they produce, the sticky honeydew, which drops to the ground. It's on patio furniture, on the sidewalk, on the driveway, on your car, if you have a car nearby. And it's very annoying. But as far as controlling it, it's very, very difficult. One possible option is to apply a dormant oil spray early in the year before leaf break. Another option would be to use a systemic insecticide, which absorbs the actual insecticide into the actual plant tissue. So there are some options.
All right. And let's go back to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Again, that email address, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. RP is on the line in Knoxville. Hi, RP.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Last week you had a lady calling in about a voodoo plant that had bloomed, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I've been raising them for several years. I have a couple different species. They're a Mediterranean weed, as far as I can figure out from what I can gather on the internet. But what she described was the flower part.
Mm-hmm.
And these plants are like an amaryllis. They have two vegetative parts. One is where they have a large flower that dies off, dries up.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the vegetative part.
The foliage, right. Mm-hmm.
Looks like a tree.
Yeah, kind of, right.
And typically they have like scale, snake skin is what I've heard described as far as the coloration. And they are, you know, a species, an oddity.
Right, very.
She was planning on digging it up and taking it back in, and I would recommend that she replant it and let it go back to the vegetative part. Otherwise, the bulb won't have enough strength to flower again.
Right, and you bring it inside in the fall of the year, right.
Okay, well, RP, thanks a lot for sharing your wisdom on that front with us. Next, let's go to Susan in Iowa City. Hi, Susan.
Hi there.
What's your question?
Question about a dwarf gala apple tree. It's about 3 years old, and when I planted it, the label said it should be 8 to 10 feet tall. It's about 12 feet tall, so I'd like to prune it to reduce its size without, compromising its ability to bloom next spring. Is there a way to do that? And then I want to know how to identify a water sprite on a tree. I'm not sure how to do that.
Well, typically a water sprout goes straight up.
Okay.
Straight up, it's vertical. And so you can basically identify that almost immediately. It grows straight up. It grows very quickly. It might be 2, 3, 4 feet in length. That's a water sprout.
Okay.
It's going to be hard to make this a small tree. You really can't do that. One thing you can do is possibly reduce the size somewhat. So if you have this branch that's growing maybe upward and outward, maybe going back and pruning it off just above a branch that is growing more horizontal than vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And that way reduce the size or the height of the tree.
Okay.
But don't make it just indiscriminate. Just try to find a branch on this main, more vertical branch that's more horizontal and cut it off just above that point so that branch still has a growing point.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. And from apple trees to peach trees, Lou is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Lou.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Quick question. I've got a peach tree. It's about 9 years old. Every other year, it really produces tremendously. About 3 years ago, I noticed that the trunk was split all the way from the ground up to the first fork. And I put some tree covering, tar type material in there. But I noticed every year as it gets bigger, it keeps cracking and that tar is no longer sealing it up. Should I be continuing to do that? Am I going to lose a tree or should I let it go and try to heal itself?
Well, placing that really doesn't help. It may make you feel better, but it doesn't really help the tree. And
that made me feel better.
But as far as peach trees in Iowa are short-lived, they very seldom live past 15 years of age. They're just short-lived. They don't like our winters. They just have problems in Iowa. So I basically would enjoy the tree as long as you can. You really can't do much to help. And expect the tree probably to survive for a few more years, basically.
Well, that's not very good news, but I guess I'll take it.
But but you might get one or two good yields between now and the time it dies. So it's done its duty.
Lou, thank you so much for your call, and I hope you get a couple more years there before it goes. Let's try to squeeze in an email question before the break. This is a question from, I'm sorry, maybe we don't have time for this. If I can't read it, we'll just do it after the break. How's that sound? It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me today, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Jeff Iles, Professor and Chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. And I promise I will read your email if you send it to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also give us a call, 866-780-9100. We'll be back in just a moment after the break. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me this hour, Jeff Iles, Professor and Chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. I also want to mention something that is coming up in the not-too-distant future. It is the 30th anniversary of Horticulture Day, and on Saturday, July 30th, we're going to have a big celebration at the Iowa State University Horticulture Research Farm outside of Ames. It's from 1 to 4:30. Everyone is invited. There will be many members of the Hort Gang there, and we would love to have you there. You can find out more information on our website, iowapublicradio.org. And now I will read that email question that I failed to read before. This is from Ralph and Carol. He said, "We had hail at the beginning of May. There was some foliar damage to plants. Surprisingly, our rhubarb was damaged more than anything else. Initially, it didn't look too bad, but the bruised stalks were soon not usable and got progressively worse until leaves yellowed and the stalks died. Should I have removed all the damaged rhubarb at the time and let it regrow, or, as I did, just let nature take its course? We are getting some regrowth now."
Right. I would have left it, because as long as the foliage is still green, at least parts of the foliage are still green, they're still functioning, and I would leave it for the plant. But once they collapse and die totally, then I get rid of that dead debris.
All right. And now we'll go back to the phones. Many, many tree questions on the line. David in Coralville. Hi, David.
Good morning. I wanted to talk about a scrub tree that was on the property that we purchased many years ago. This tree grew a branch up to my chimney, which started banging against my chimney. I lopped it off. And since then, the remainder of the tree, which is probably about 50 feet long, so it's got a pretty good-sized trunk, it's growing at almost a 45-degree angle out of what is normally a dry creek, but lately with all the floods and stuff, water runs down it, so I think that might be eroding the roots a bit. But this tree stretches out, and it seems to grow like 6 feet every year. Hmm. And now it's out over a deck that I just built. And I'm wondering, at that angle, can that tree actually continue to grow and be viable? And should I be lopping it down and taking it away, because it might pose a threat to the property?
Yeah, probably, David. Do you know what kind of a tree it is? Any idea?
I really don't know. Know much about trees, but it was just part of a fairly good size original stand of trees that grows around this drainage.
Yeah, well, it could be elm, could be mulberry, could be a lot of different things, and typically those trees aren't known for their structural integrity. So if it's hanging over your deck, I'd be a little bit concerned. It sounds like a lot of weight being supported, maybe by very not much of a branch union back at where it begins from. So again, I'm making some judgments here without seeing what you're talking about, but it doesn't sound like the best architecture I've ever heard about.
Yeah, 45 degree angle. I've never seen a tree grow at that angle.
Yeah.
But,
well, some of these trees, as you've mentioned, are rather resourceful, and perhaps this one's growing towards the light. Perhaps it's just trying to survive. But having that thing hanging over my deck doesn't sound like a very good plan.
Yeah, I've already trimmed it back a bit, but still, when it comes down, I just feel like it's going to at some point, especially with a rodent in the ditch, that it's going to come down with a lump, and I don't want anybody around it.
I think your intuition's good. Get off the chainsaw.
Yeah, they do tend to come down with a lump. David, thank you for your call. Next up, Bill in Belmont. Hi, Bill.
Hey, how you doing, Charity? Great show.
Good, thanks. What's your question?
12 years ago, we planted a Japanese red maple in the yard and staked it up. It's grown straight and tall. It's absolutely a beautiful tree. It's about 30 feet tall now, but the lower branches are becoming obtrusive when we're trying to mow. So I'm going to take those lower branches off this fall, and it's going to encompass probably about a half a dozen branches. And I need to know when's the proper time to take them off after the sap has gone back into the root system, and is that too many at one time? Also, this past fall, we planted a sunburst locust, and it is growing in a rather gnarled manner. I tried to stake it up, but it seems to be growing, getting gnarled in between the areas where I've tied it and tried to pull it back to straighten. Is going with longer sticks and more binding the answer for that?
Bill, let's start with the maple. I guess I would prefer to prune now rather than in the fall. You mentioned a fall pruning event, and I think I would rather do that now. And I'd also caution you about taking off too much tissue at one time. So just like we talked earlier in the hour, maybe take off a couple of those lower branches this summer. Maybe do a little bit more next March, but it's a gradual kind of thing. You can take off too much at one time, so do it now or next March. As far as the sunburst honey locust, they do tend to be kind of gnarly, and they all grow at kind of a random kind of a gnarly pattern. They're not real regular growing trees. You were talking about staking it, and I guess I would prefer to use staking materials that don't cut into the trunk of the tree. And they'd give it some stability, but yet don't keep it so rigid that it can't move at all. So I'm a big fan of using staking materials that are soft and wide, and provide stability without immobilizing the tree.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Brian in West Des Moines. Hi, Brian.
Hello, good morning.
What's your question?
I have a mature red maple. I'd say 40-foot spread. I'm having the power cable trenched through about 15 feet off the trunk. I'm wondering how much damage it's going to do to the roots, and is this tree going to survive that?
The tree's in pretty good health, Brian?
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful big red maple, nice and full. They're going to go down about, I suppose, 3 foot.
Sure.
And like I said, 15 foot from the trunk. So I don't know how much damage it's going to do to those roots.
You know, I wish I could give you a better answer. Obviously, it's not a good thing for the tree, but it could be a whole lot worse. So there will be some root damage done to maybe 30% of the root system, perhaps up to 40%. But if the tree is healthy, and if the other parts of the root system will be left, if they're not impacted at all, then I think the tree has a pretty good chance of getting through this. But famous last words, I guess only time will tell. All you can do really for a tree that size is to eliminate any further wounding and to perhaps water if you're a rich man and want to throw your money to the watering gods. But watering a big tree is sometimes very difficult, but there isn't much you can do. So it's kind of a waiting game. If you could just help the work crew stay away from the rest of the roots, that's about the best you can do.
Yeah, well, it's kind of on the property line, so I can't go into the neighbors. I'd love to go around the root system, but we're going to clip it by about five or 6 feet into the periphery. So I think we'll still have probably 3/4 roots. I don't have a big concern, but I just wanted to pose that to you.
And other things you could do dancing around the perimeter of the problem is to mulch around the tree instead of having turf grass in those areas. I know a lot of folks don't like the look of a lot of mulch around their trees, but mulch will not compete with the tree as turf grass will. So that's something else to consider.
All right, Brian, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Melissa in Des Moines. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
Well, we live in an area that is full of oak trees, and all around us, our trees are suffering from oak wilt and having to come down. We have two oaks on our property right now that are just beautiful, and I'm concerned about oak wilt attacking them. And is there anything that we can do to prevent it? And what are your thoughts on prevention of oak wilt?
Melissa, the oaks in your neighborhood, do you know the species? Do you know what we're looking?
Primarily white oak.
Okay. So
it's the Waterbury neighborhood in Des Moines. And so it's primarily red oak, but there are bur oaks. I mean, excuse me, primarily white oak, but there are bur oaks and red oak.
The good news for you is that white oak tend to be a little more resistant to oak wilt. So perhaps maybe that's why your trees are still looking pretty good. Obviously, as we've talked before, you don't want to prune them unless it's the dormant season. I'm a bit in over my head here. We have some really good pathologists on campus that would provide a better answer, but sometimes severing root grafts between oak trees, and sometimes oaks will graft together below ground, and that's one way to prevent oak wilt transmission. There might be some utility in using a preventative fungicide, but the jury is still out on some of that. We have a plant and insect diagnostic clinic on campus, and you can find them through the ISU website. That one might be a good place to begin your quest. There's also some faculty in the Department of Plant Path that work on this pathogen, certainly more than I do. These are high-value trees, obviously, and I don't want to steer you the wrong way. So you might want to begin with the plant and insect diagnostic clinic, but white oak is in your favor. Red oak has a much greater chance of contracting oak wilt than white oak does.
All right, Melissa, thanks a lot for your call, and we'll go next to Mia in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Mia.
Hi, thank you for taking my call this morning.
Sure.
I have a question about this big, beautiful oak tree that's in my front yard, and it's like 3 to 4 stories tall. It's got this beautiful straight trunk, but the biggest issue is that it's entirely leaning at a like 50-degree angle, and it's like pulling up the ground around it. And thankfully, it's not leaning towards the house, but I'm just wondering, since there's surrounding trees around it, and we've had other trees uproot themselves in heavy storms, I'm just wondering if it's something I should really be concerned about, or if I should just, you know, let it be.
Letting it be. I love the album Let It Be. That was a great album by the Beatles. I don't know if you remember that, but I would not let this be, Mia. I mean, without even seeing it, this doesn't sound good. Is the leaning and is the uprooting a recent event, or has this been going on for a while?
It's been leaning since we bought the house.
Yeah.
But I think it's gotten worse.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't tell.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is an easy call. Yeah, you need to get on the phone this afternoon. I'd get a couple of opinions, but I'd have some arborists come out and look at that tree. I don't know what they could do in this case. Now, maybe they will alleviate some of the weight on the canopy, take off some branches to maybe bring the tree back into balance. But it's leaning for a reason. Who knows? There might have been some root death, some root damage, root rot. On one side of the plant, there's probably a very good reason why the tree is leaning, but that isn't a good thing. And so I would solicit some assistance sooner than later.
All right. Hard to come back from that, huh?
Well, I don't know what's going on, but that sounds pretty extreme.
All right, Mia, thanks a lot for your call, and good luck with that. Next up, let's go to Barry in Solon. Hi, Barry.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I have some lilac transplants that have been transplanted for about 10 years. They worked real good until this last spring. I think they leafed out. I think everything leafed out. Then we had that bad late frost, and 75% of the 10-foot row, it looks, you know, defoliated. It had some weird foliage that came out for a while, but doesn't seem to stay. And then it's next to an LP tank, so I don't know if the LP guy sprayed them. But the other lilacs in the yard, 25 feet away, look just fine.
Okay. Well, if they did suffer a late frost or freeze as far as damage, they should have recovered very, very quickly. So that should not be what's going on right now. So I don't know what's going on. I would suggest maybe sending a sample into our plant diagnostic clinic here at Iowa State, where you go out there and clip off maybe three or four small branches. Choose branches clearly showing what you're concerned about. Put those in a plastic bag and send those to the plant disease clinic here at Iowa State. Now, they do charge a fee for that service. It's $20. But you can find the information right on the internet if you go to Iowa State University.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Barry. And let's get through some email questions here. This one is from Brent. We recently moved into a new house with young apple trees. The trees have low branches growing close to the base of the tree and many sucker. Is it okay to trim these now or wait until another time?
I would take off the suckers at this point and maybe do some pruning early next spring, like in March.
All right, and here's a question from Asmin. I live in southeast Minnesota. I just moved into my new house back in February. I have a maple tree in front of the house that's about 8 to 9 feet from the house, and I wonder if it's too close. The tree's about 15 years old and big and healthy.
Hmm. He doesn't say what kind of maple?
No.
Hmm. It's close, but we can always cope with that. I mean, this is another one of those situations where some pruning would be necessary right away and down the line. But I would hate to sacrifice a nice maple in southeastern Minnesota. Have him send us a picture, Charity, and then we can give a better answer.
All right, will do. Also, a second question. Asmin wants to plant apple and cherry trees. When is the best time to do that?
Typically, spring would be the best time, and make sure it's a hardy varieties.
All right. Here's from a question from Doug in North Liberty. I have a 70-foot tall pig nut hickory. Dropping leaves and lower branches are dying. What can be done?
Huh. Pig nut hickory. Well, there could be all kinds of things at play there. It could be disease. I need more information.
All right.
That's a hard one, Charity.
Another one. Send the questions and more information. Well, send the pictures and more information.
Yeah, that would be the best thing to do. What where did he say he was from? What part of the state?
North Liberty. Near Iowa City.
Yeah, they've got a really good district forester out there, Mark Vitash. maybe you've heard of him, Charity?
I have. So
he's got more hair than I do too. So let's send that one to Vitash.
All right. So get in touch with your DNR district forester. Mark Vitash is the best advice there. All right. Here's a houseplant question. This is from Roberto. My friend and I have a debate about the best way to water orchids. He says it's best to put them into water and then let the water drain for a few hours. I say to use ice cubes, but knowing that orchids are tropical, even I'm skeptical about using ice cubes. What are your thoughts on this?
I wouldn't use the ice cubes. Some people do. That's fine. I would water from above, and I would water until it begins to flow out the bottom of the container and then discard that excess water. That's my procedure.
Watering from above, does it need to avoid the foliage or not?
Right. Don't get the foliage wet. Okay. Just apply it directly to the potting soil.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for being here today. We had a lot of questions we couldn't get to, but we'll be back again next Friday. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Jeff Iles, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. Also, remember, we have that 30th anniversary of Horticulture Day party coming up Saturday, July 30th at the ISU Horticulture Research Farm near Ames, 1 to 4:30. Everyone is invited. You can find out more information on our website, iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.